Hello there, everybody, and welcome to another bumper edition of the official EFL podcast with me, David Prutton. Our first guest is an experienced broadcaster and a familiar voice on Sky Sports EFL coverage.
I love the spontaneity of commentary, the fact that you can prepare all you like to prepare and the whistle goes, you have no idea what is going to happen. And it's magic when you get a good game or a great goal or a career-defining moment or something like that to sort of try and not spoil, if you like.
We'll be getting some clarification on new laws around added time from a PGMOL referee.
From our perspective, being able to work proactively so that those kind of delaying tactics perhaps that we might see sometimes or those stoppages, we try and shorten that as well so that we don't see big numbers at the end of each half, but numbers that are reflective of what's happened in the game.
An engaging and experienced Irish international talks promotion expectations, big club mentality and what his next step might be.
You know, being the age that I am now, I've seen obviously a lot of people, you know, start off their careers at a young age and see guys in the dressing room who are finishing their careers. And a couple of things that struck me over the course of my career is the couple of players that weren't prepared when they were finished, and that scares me a little bit, if I'm being honest with you. I don't want to be that player that isn't organised, that wakes up one day and go, oh, what am I doing now?
Plus, we've got Gary Rowett taking on our 72 in 72 right here on the official EFL podcast. Okie dokie, well, we've got a treat this week right here on the official EFL podcast, not just for you, dear listener, but for me sat in this chair. We're going to get the thoughts, the opinions and the experience, the wit and the wisdom of Sky Sports commentator David Stowell. David, thank you so much for joining us. I could say broadcaster, I could say colleague. Let's bottom it out. Friend. Welcome, friend. How are we?
Oh, there we go. That's very nice. See, I didn't know what you were going to say there. You said many other words to me in that kind of situation previously, so I'll take friend and run with it. Why not?
It's lovely to see you. Thank you very much for joining us. We look forward to chatting all things League One, League Two and the Championship. And also a little treat for you as well. We've got Conor Hourihan coming up with us, Derby midfielder. So we're going to get both stuck into him in due course. But first, let's turn our attentions back to the EFL week and the weekend coming up. Now, broadcasting, working in TV is all very glamorous. It's all Winnebagos. It's all chauffeur-driven limousines. It's helicopter rides. Last night you were at Portsmouth. You live up in the Northwest. Wasn't quite that, was it, my friend?
No, I think that's... let's start off by saying this is the best job in the world. I absolutely adore it.
You have to say that.
There's no one sort of bullying me here into saying that. But I love the spontaneity of commentary, the fact that you can prepare all you like to prepare and the whistle goes, you have no idea what is going to happen. And it's magic when you get a good game or a great goal or a career-defining moment or something like that to sort of try and not spoil, if you like. But yeah, there are certain aspects of the job that people perhaps don't realise or think are more glamorous than they are. And as you say, Portsmouth against Exeter City last night, I live in the Northwest, so I travelled down to Portsmouth, did the game, and then travelled back home again, which means you get back home sort of, I think I got into the house around about 4:30 in the morning, and I've got two young kids, so I was up to do the nursery football camp run at 7:00 in the morning, and that's your day, and you sort of, you know, you roll with it. But I love the job. I wouldn't change it. But it's when you travel a long way, which we do with games, it's every now and again you just need a nap.
I think you're absolutely right. Maybe bringing in some form of soccer siesta would help us somewhere along the lines. Anyway, moving swiftly on from that. So, Fratton Park, you were there. A boisterous Fratton Park as ever. Pompey 1, Exeter 0. What did you make of the two teams that you saw and what you've seen so far of League One this year?
Well, it's really interesting, to be honest, because I, like many football fans up and down the country, I'm always interested when there are predictions made about how teams are going to fare in a season. Indeed, I'm talking to the king of predictions through the course of the season, coming up with score lines as you do. And to be fair, you get a fair few right, which is why you keep doing it, I guess.
Don't give me any flannel. You're already on here. You're fine.
Yeah, well, I always tell you when you get them wrong anyway, which is often. But anyway, that aside, it's always interesting to see how people, ex-players, fans, pundits, all sort of judge teams before a ball is kicked, as is the way now, and then to see how it actually works. Not so you can point and laugh at people when they're wrong necessarily, but just to sort of see what you perhaps would predict, mm-hmm. and then how it works out. And of course, a lot of people have said in League One, with the big teams that gained promotion last season, it's quite an open League One this campaign. It will be really interesting to see who ends up in those positions in the sort of higher echelons of the division. And from what I've seen so far and what I thought previously, and clearly what other people have thought as well, Portsmouth are going to be a side who are in that conversation. Mm-hmm. John Mussino has done a brilliant job there. Indeed, since he's been appointed in January, only three teams have won more points in League One than Portsmouth. They're unbeaten now in 15 games in all competitions, 14 league games, which is their best run since the late 1940s. Wow. And I think it's really important at the moment that they seize upon this positivity, the goals that they're scoring, plenty of goals as well from different sources. Colby Bishop, the difference last night. Because there has been a lot of negativity down there in recent seasons, because they're desperate to get up back into the Championship, to get back into those successful days that they had when they were in the Premier League and winning the FA Cup. And it feels like a really good place to be at the moment. They've made some very good signings in the summer. Regan Poole was excellent last night, one of those who's been brought in. Colby Bishop, as I say, leading the line, top scorer last season. They've got goals on the bench in Kusini Yengi, who's sort of grabbed the headlines in this early part of the season. And Alex Robertson on loan from Manchester City. I could go on. I think it's a really good squad. It's very balanced at the moment because injuries haven't properly bitten anybody yet, really.
Yeah.
So, I think there's a lot of positivity there. And there should also be a lot of positivity within the Exeter City ranks, because this is a club establishing themselves in League One with a good solid start, a very impressive win at Wickham on opening day, 2-0 up inside 8 minutes. Solid draw against Blackpool in the last game. This, their first sort of bump in the road, as I described it last night, mm-hmm. in commentary. But I think for a side that should just be looking to be in League One this season and improve on last season in the different ways that they can, it was a positive night, albeit they left with nothing.
I think it would be safe to say, wouldn't it, that if we're looking at front runners, favourites, pre-season picks for promotion, then Derby County would be one for that. And as I said, we've got the pleasure of Conor Hourihan later on in the podcast to give us his take on particularly perhaps last night for Derby County, of course, and the season so far. Not quite up and running, I think, is one way of putting it. Missing out on the playoffs on the final day of last season. Given that big fish, smaller pond mentality, Stowley, are we looking at one of, if not the favourite in that particular division this season that hasn't quite gone through the gears yet?
Yeah, I think spot on. I think it would be interesting to see what Connor says in terms of various aspects of Derby County at the moment, because they've got to be in that top group of teams just because of the size of the club, the ability within the squad. But it's I guess you'd probably describe it as a club that it's challenging mentally being a Derby County player over the last couple of seasons for various reasons. And now that things are a bit more stable than they are, or certainly stabilising as a club, they are now a fancied club, whereas before they were swimming against the tide. And that's a different shift in mentality as well, isn't it? Paul Warne's talked in the last few days about some players maybe having their heads turned a bit with transfer speculation linking them away from the club, which clearly doesn't help. And he's been very quick to acknowledge that rather than deny that any of that is happening. And I think he's trying to find the right blend within the team as well. Martin Waghorn coming on and scoring. He's trying to work out how to best fill those attacking roles. Clearly, the loss of David McGoldrick from last season is a big deal for the club, because not only did he score goals, but he was a sort of wise old head helping the youth along in that Derby County side. And maybe also they knew that they had him up there as a consistent source of goals.
Yeah.
Which I guess in a team, and you'll know far better than me, if you know you've got guaranteed goals up top, there's less pressure on everything else to be perfect, isn't there?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I thought you were going to ask me about guaranteed goals, which obviously I've got no idea.
I saw your effort at Watford the other night.
I mean, that'll never not follow me around, will it? The gift that keeps on giving. No, I think you're absolutely right. And I think that expectation, Paul Warne strikes us both, doesn't he, as the perfect man to lead him through that in that kind of honest and emotive way. And having seen his time at Rotherham, being able to get a team up, fighting against the odds to keep that team up in the Championship. We know full well that he understands the kind of size of the job. And another one, I mean, when it comes to goals, a team that's never had any problem, I mean, regardless of who the manager is, scoring goals is Peterborough United, of course, isn't it? Now, as we all saw on that very, very famous second leg at Hillsborough at the end of last season, it was keeping a clean sheet, which was their undoing. They've won 3 out of 3. We all were wondering where they were going to go off the back of that defeat, whether Darren Ferguson would stay. He, to all intents and purposes, looked thoroughly miffed, for want of a better phrase, at the end of that game. He stuck around. They've started brightly. Those key players, the likes of a Johnson, Clark, Harris, firing already. I know we're only in its infancy in this season, but does this strike you as once bitten, very badly bitten in the playoffs, twice shy in the sense of, lads, it's automatic this year and we're going to do it properly?
You do feel that, don't you? I mean, I can only imagine. I mean, we always have to put football in context with life, I think, in that clearly outside of the game, people struggle with all sorts of things on a daily basis. Terrible things happen around the world. Mm-hmm. So when you talk about something in football being devastating, you have to be very careful with sort of how broad you use that word, if you like. But as defeats go, that playoff semi-final defeat must have been devastating for the club, for the fans, for the players individually as well as a collective. And I always think in football, as a manager, as a player, as a commentator sometimes perhaps, you're judged by your response to negatives in a way. If you have a bad game in any one of those roles or a bad run of games, it's how you come back from it. And you can't have a better response than they have produced this season. And I think once Darren Ferguson decided to stay, then it was always in my mind that they would be right up there again, because he is the kind of manager who reacts well and turns things around in those kind of situations. And clearly the bit is firmly between the teeth for the players, for the staff, and obviously for the fans as well, because they want the best for the club. So best possible start, and early days, of course, but the signs are very promising from their point of view, yeah.
We'll definitely keep a keen eye on that. And of course, we're talking about teams whose eyes are very firmly on the Sky Bet Championship. Speaking of the Sky Bet Championship, there's a big game on Friday, which is Leeds against West Brom. Any idea at all what's going on at Leeds, Stowley?
Well, it's another club. We were just sort of talking there about Derby County and how difficult it has perhaps been mentally for some players there. I think the Leeds badge, and again, I bow to your greater knowledge on this, It can perhaps be a heavy badge to wear in some senses. The great history that the club has, the terrific players who've worn the shirt before, the expectation is always huge. Certainly when Leeds are in the Premier League, the expectation's massive. Mm-hmm. So when you drop down a level, everyone expects you to be a top club winning games all the time. And if it doesn't quite work out at the start of a season, then the pressure mounts, doesn't it? And it's a division, the Championship, full of clubs with plenty of ability, but with far less to lose, if you like, than a club like Leeds United. So from that point of view, when things go slightly wrong, it gets magnified on a bigger scale, doesn't it, at Elland Road? And that's maybe where they are at the moment. Clearly, they're trying to sort out the squad because of the high earners perhaps being loaned out, and we've seen quite a few players leave in that sense. So I almost think it needs to sort of settle down. But the danger is you can settle down too late, can't you? And by that point, other teams have taken control.
I think the bit that's really kind of stood out for us, and not just, I mean, I tend to hear about it a lot, given geographically where I am in Yorkshire.
Yeah.
There is a disbelief in the way that, I suppose, certain players have kind of put themselves in a position where it's quite evident that they are done and dusted and they want to move on. And the mitigation I have tried to place on a little bit of that is football being a short career. Fundamentally, you're the only person responsible for your career, wherever that ends up being, in whichever club. But there is that perhaps maybe a bit outdated sense of loyalty that comes with being at a club like a Leeds United, who afford you the opportunity in the Premier League. And collectively, obviously, relegation means that the team hasn't achieved the standard that's necessary. I think that's... I'm trying to put myself in the position of a fan here, and you can relate to this as we're both football fans, where when there is that inkling that perhaps players have, as you say, sometimes their heads are turned, that's, I think that's the bit as football fans that people kind of go, we understand it's a business. We understand there's the sharp end of it, but until you've moved on, give everything for that particular shirt. I think maybe that's just what's sticking in the craw a little bit with regards to Leeds United and a large section of their fan base.
Yeah, and I suppose as a fan, you're always looking out for your club. You want the completely best for your club. You don't...
That if, never if changes, does it? Your love of that club never exactly goes. Yeah,
so if a player scores 25 goals for you in the Championship in a season, but you don't go up, you don't want that player to leave for the better of their career. You want them to keep banging them in for you in the Championship to get you up to the Premier League. So I suppose there's that element of it. It's an understandable selfishness that we would all have for our team, because we want that team to do the best it can do with the players doing the best that they can do to get the club to where you want them to be. Mm.
It's going to be an intriguing one. That game against West Brom, they seem to have, I say, turned a corner, won the last time out. Carlos, of course, knows all about Leeds United being on the coaching staff there with Marcelo Bielsa. We're going to turn our attentions a bit further south. And when I say a bit further south, I mean Plymouth, which is possibly as far south as you can get, maybe in the Championship, I'd say, so geographically.
Yes, yes, southwest, it's certainly a long way from the northwest.
It's certainly a trek, isn't it?
Yeah, and I know that part of the world well, having worked in Devon for a bit. And geographically, it's difficult perhaps to get players down to that part of the country. Not because it's a wonderful part of the country, because it's a great place to live, and the people down there are terrific. It's a lovely area of the country, but ultimately, a lot of players are from maybe clubs around London or clubs around the northwest, and therefore Devon is a long way away. So getting players down there and trying to strike the right deal for the club, but also to attract players, can be difficult. But Plymouth Argyle have certainly risen to that challenge. And it's a fascinating meeting between Plymouth and Southampton, because they're coming at it from contrasting angles, of course, after one team went up and the other team went down. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be an interesting one to watch, and understandably, our cameras will be there for it.
We know that there's that stat from the percentage of teams that come out of the Premier League that go back up. It's around the 30 to 33% mark, I think, from what I remember recent years. So it's by no means a straight line for Southampton, is it? Especially against a team in Plymouth who have started fantastically well. There will be that sense of occasion there, and we're not looking at little old Plymouth against the mighty Southampton, are we? This feels to me like a very level playing field that these two are meeting at the weekend.
Absolutely, and also, of course, you look at it from the point of view of the home fans will be thinking, well, we've got nothing to lose here, so let's make it a really difficult atmosphere for Southampton to come into. And you've got that the level of expectation. You've also got the challenge now for the two managers, who are really approachable guys. Yeah. Always love talking to both of them. They'll always give you their time, which is something you shouldn't take for granted in this business, because not every manager necessarily wants to. But I think it's really interesting to think of the budget that Stephen Schumacher will work with, compared to, presumably, we can imagine that the budget that Russell Martin might get with the players who are leaving Southampton, the millions of pounds that's coming in transfer fees. But also, while it's great to have that money to play with, it's only great if you spend it in the right way and get in the right characters as well as players, isn't it? So that's going to be fascinating over the next, what have we got, couple of weeks, to see, okay, people are leaving Southampton, who comes in? And what do they do? What do they bring to the table in terms of ability with the ball and sense with the head as well?
That's obviously Plymouth Southampton. Last one I want to touch on in the Championship is, have a guess. Did you know there's a Neil Warnock derby this weekend? I mean, that will be every other week somewhere.
I was going to say there'll be plenty of those, weren't there?
So this one's Borough against Huddersfield, and again a Borough side potentially, if all the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed, that we'll have to figure out this season without Tuba Akpom, won't they? Which, again, I don't think, and I mean this with the greatest respect to Tuba, and having spoken to him a few times over the course of the last season or so, this time last year they were contemplating a season without Tuba Akpom, because by virtue of the fact that he was nowhere near the first team. Hence the fact he gets into the team, scores all those goals, gets on the radar, potentially moves on. And you've got, I won't use the term wily old fox, but you've got the wily old fox of Neil Warnock at the one end up against Michael Carrick. And I'm sure that Neil will be there with a raised eyebrow and a quick grin on his face to know that this is management. You get good players that perform well. Sometimes you can't keep hold of them. It's all part of the learning curve for Michael, isn't it?
Absolutely. And it also underlines that there are different ways to manage football clubs, aren't there? And different personalities that are employed around the game who, in some cases, can get the same kind of results. In other cases, it works out differently. Really interesting to see the action on the touchline. not just the action on the pitch. Knowing both managers as I do, and of course you're good friends with Mr. Warnock. I worked with Michael for a few years as a player, and it's just interesting to see how the two of them are behind closed doors. That would be a really interesting feature to watch. In terms of Middlesbrough, I mean, we're talking before about a player who scores you 25, 30 goals in the Championship or whatever. Of course you want them to stay. 29 goals last season for Tuba Akpom, a guy who was very approachable, very chatty at the EFL Awards do at the end of the season. Obviously, you were heavily involved in that. I was on the sidelines, but enjoyed chatting to people, including Tuba along the way. And difficult to replace. Likewise, Ryan Giles, who's gone to Luton. He was on loan at Borough, wasn't he? And Cameron Archer's gone back to Villa. Two more players who had a real impact in Borough's rise. But I suppose, if you were to put a team at the bottom of the Championship in the early part of the season and see if they could rise high, then it would be Middlesbrough, wouldn't it, who would have the best chance of probably doing it, providing they can get someone who scores goals should Tuba leave. So after their heroics last season from low down in the table, let's see what they can do from bottom after three.
Right, League Two is where we are now going to head. There's a team with a perfect start, three clean sheets, 9 points from nine, led by Neil Harris right at the top. Gillingham are the ones leading the way. But, I mean, not just Gillingham, but there's a couple of teams up there, Stowley, that I think you've picked out that potentially are making mugs of the pre-season experts.
Yeah, it's always interesting to see when things don't go according to some people's plans when predicting things like this, just because I always think you should give credit where credit's due in the game. I'm always keen when a referee or an assistant gets a really tough decision right to praise them for it, because everyone's very quick to say, that's an awful decision, he's cost us 3 points or whatever. So you've got to level things out sometimes. And when you look at the League Two table at the moment, you've mentioned Gillingham, but it's also interesting to see Crawley and Barrow at the top of the table. Crawley, who a lot of people wrote off pre-season, a lot of 1 to 24s, they were low down, if not at the bottom of the table. Only survived by 3 points last season. They had the John Yem situation to deal with. They had the character to go and win at Hartlepool by 2-0, which kept them up, basically, and sent Hartlepool down. And it almost looks like that result, coupled with pre-season recruitment and all the bits that goes with that and the management team, has sort of given them something to cling to, ready for the start of this season. And what a start it's been.
And the good thing is, I mean, given, as you say, the impact of Barrow being led by Pete Wild very well, Crawley with Scott Lindsay, I think certainly reading Scott's comments, he's very happy to be, trying to word this in the nicest possible way, proving people wrong, there you go, at the start of the season, and potentially where they may end up, because having had the pleasure of being able to sit and talk to the likes of Graham Alexander, who came up against the huge Wrexham machine on the opening weekend of the season, I think avid listeners, hopefully, to the podcast, and they're very quick to remind us, and it's absolutely right, there is more to League Two than Wrexham and Notts County, isn't there?
Yeah, it certainly is. There's some great stories around in League Two. And I was at Barrow last season when they hosted Aston Villa in the Carabao Cup, doing the game live for Sky. And it was really interesting to see the club sort of react to having a game like that, to Aston Villa paying respect to Barrow by fielding a strong side, albeit with some young players, of course, as is the nature of cup competitions these days. But making sure that they sent a strong side. They won by 6-0. Cameron Archer, we've already talked about, scoring a hat-trick. And I think Barrow is a well-run club, but it knows its limits. And I mean that in the nicest possible way. I've spoken to the people at Barrow, and I think it, sometimes when you're in a certain place in the EFL pyramid, it's good to know where you roughly should be. But that's not to say that you shouldn't have ambition to be pushing things right up to the top and getting as far up the table as you can do. And clearly results are giving them the rewards they deserve at the moment, and long may it continue.
Ambition is the word that comes screaming out of Stockport County, isn't it? Currently third bottom. Again, we do reiterate a very embryonic league table, played three, just a solitary point. And a team that seemed to be in a hurry, didn't it, under Dave Challoner and the ownership there. They've got a kind of parameter of years where they want to be by a certain time. They nearly got there at the end of last season, didn't they? But a tricky start, but as ever, talking about this in mid-August, plenty of time to turn that around.
Yeah, and sometimes having those ambitions, if you like, that time frame can be a really good thing and can sort of really galvanise a squad. We saw it with Salford City in the non-league as they sort of charged up the non-league system. But obviously they've really struggled to make an impression on the promotion stakes in League Two. For Stockport, maybe there's a little bit of I don't really like the word hangover from the playoffs, but losing the playoff final in the way that they did to Carlisle. They were seven minutes, Stockport County, from going up before the equaliser came in from Amari Patrick. And then, of course, you go into extra time. Anything can happen. Then you go to penalty kicks. And, I mean, I covered that game at Wembley, and it was one of those where you can just see as players step up to take a penalty kick, they know how important it is. They know that they're career, maybe their club's future, certainly hangs in the balance on one kick of a football. And you think about in a campaign how many times in a training session or in matches you would kick a ball as a player, and it comes down to one strike. And if you get that strike wrong, you're remembered for the wrong reasons, your club misses out on a lot of money, and the pressure that goes with that, and then the disappointment that comes with it when it doesn't go your way. And you know, maybe there's nothing to do with that at all. Maybe it's just they haven't been good enough to get the points in the early games. But ultimately, I think that is difficult to get over. And it's also important, as you said, to mention that it is a very, very early table. And teams like Stockport County will get stronger as the season goes on. No denying that. They will be in the right half of the league. They will be at the right end of the league, I think, for where they want to be. The question is, how do they jostle for position with the other teams who are clearly going to be dangerous this year?
So eloquently put. I mean, ever thought about doing this professionally on a regular basis, talking about stuff like this?
I think, you know, sometimes it helps when you're running on fumes, not having had much sleep. Words sort of tumble out without
your
control.
Delirious, mate. You look really well. I mean, for considering you've had 2 hours sleep, that you've been wonderful so far. Are you enjoying yourself?
Oh, absolutely. I love it. Absolutely love it. I don't think I've looked well for about 15 years, but I'll take it. So,
you can't especially play from football your good self. For that or us.
Well, especially from your good self with a strong beard game at the moment. I'm liking it. Look.
Can you just clarify that it's not a dyed beard?
I've seen that
enough.
A lot. I've seen a lot of people saying that. I have no proof, but it's.
I think we know each other well enough, Stowley, that if that day comes to pass, you can delete my number out of your phone. You never have to speak to me ever again. I promise you that.
I just need to sort out the hair on the top of the head rather than the chin at the moment. But there we go.
That cherubic face. I get lost in those eyes, my friend. Anyway, right, seeing as though you're running on fumes, you know what? I'm going to let you have a little break in this midsection of the podcast, but I'm going to bring you back later on when we're both going to be firing questions at the Derby midfielder, Conor Hourihan. How does that sound, my friend?
Perfect. You're a gentleman.
Okay, joining us next on the official EFL podcast is a representative from the PGMOL, a referee no less. It's Will Finney joining us here to chat all things time added on / time wasting / behaviour across football and on the touchline. Will, thank you so much for joining us. How are you?
Yeah, very good, thank you. Thanks for having me on, Prots. Looking forward to it.
Well, the reason we need a voice of reason, my friend, we need clarification, we need explanations, we just need to know where we're at with regards to the slight tweaks in the laws of the game, because as we've all seen across the media and in football matches, the first couple of weeks have thrown up debates, shall we say. So if you could get us up to speed, Will, with what's changed, what is the reason behind some of the changes and how it's gone so far, please.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, of course, firstly, it's great to have football back after pre-season. It's been a busy pre-season. You know, we've had lots of pre-season meetings and training about some of these new initiatives and new directives. And two of the kind of key main ones have obviously been around effective playing time, trying to get the ball in play a lot more this season than we have perhaps over the last few years. Mm-hmm. And then some work and some realignment on how we'll approach kind of unacceptable behaviour by participants. And I think what's really important to highlight is that our approach and way of implementing this is, you know, has come from across the game. You know, we're all buying into this as leagues, competitions, clubs, managers, match officials, to really try and improve the football that we see on the EFL.
The directives as well, when it comes to what we've seen in the first couple of weeks with longer added time, shall we say, than perhaps we would have been used to specifically in the EFL, and the reaction to it. Just explain it to me. And I always, when I'm conducting interviews, if you can call this an interview, it's a lovely chat. If I can understand it, then you've got a fighting chance that most people can. That's the way I try and do these things.
Hopefully.
So in that sense of, in literal terms, what gets put on the end of the game is what's been added on during the course of the game because of the stoppages for, as you say, time wasting, celebrations, and you having to address on-field incidents. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. There's been some guidance put out from IFAB, and IFAB are the body that write the rules or write the laws as such. Some guidance around how we should be adding on that time for stoppages. And yeah, effectively, if there's a goal celebration and it takes 52 seconds, that time should be added on at the end of the game or at the end of the half, so that the game still has that amount of playing time. So that's kind of the first part of this around getting the ball in play more, is adding on for those lengthy stoppages that we're expected to add on for. The other part of it as well is just as match officials trying to work proactively to get the game going quicker. And of course, there's some responsibility on the players to help us do that. Mm-hmm. But from our perspective, being able to work proactively so that those kind of delaying tactics perhaps that we might see sometimes, or those stoppages, we try and shorten that as well, so that you know, we don't see big numbers at the end of each half, but numbers that are reflective of what's happened in the game.
And I think we're all keen to stress that this isn't a protocol or a way of doing things that's just been surprisingly and secretly foisted on the plane personnel or the management personnel, has it? These comes off the back of a good dialogue between yourselves and the clubs and the players to make sure that everyone that's participating in the game across the EFL knows the changes and is expected to come up to the changes accordingly.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, this is a kind of whole effort from everyone involved on a match day, and there's some really good communication and relationships that go on between clubs and match officials and all the bodies involved. And ultimately, yeah, we want the game of football to see the football being played. And so, yeah, there's a great deal of working together on this. And the first couple of weeks actually has been really positive from that perspective. You know, my experience has been that there's a real good understanding of this from a player perspective. And I think generally the approach on the field has been really positive.
You mentioned approach. Would your approach to be in games such as this, especially early on in the season, to ramp up the dialogue that you have with the players? Because I always found that a fascinating side of having the privilege of being a footballer, and this may surprise you, Will, that if you have a good dialogue with a referee, more often than not, you both enjoy the game more. Have you found that?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, absolutely. You know, we want to have really positive working relationships with everyone, including the players. And we get, you know, it's an emotional game, and that can come out in different ways and different forms. But for us, it's about, as I say, working proactively. If we can kind of work together to speed up the game, to speed up those stoppages, then we will do. But we're also being expected this year to perhaps be a little bit more robust on when we have participants and players that perhaps aren't kind of heeding to our proactive approach, let's say. Mm-hmm. So that we've effectively got a duty now to sanction when the game is being delayed unfairly. Mm-hmm.
And with regards to, say, antics, behaviour, shall we say, in the technical area on the touchline, we've already seen across a few of the games so far that has been addressed, because I think we're all in broad agreement, aren't we, that example that's set on the pitch and on the touchline, it's huge, especially nowadays. We're not talking about just the Premier League, we're talking about the whole of the EFL, how big the scope of this game actually is. It's important and imperative, isn't it, that everyone that's involved in the game, yes, we like the emotion, yes, we like the passion, we love all of that, but fundamentally, that respect towards referees, that respect towards match officials can't encroach over a certain line, can and must be, as you say, sanctioned accordingly.
Yeah, and you know, first and foremost, as match officials, we're football fans as well. You know, we have that same emotion and passion, and we get it. We understand that, and that is going to come out in various ways. I think now this season, we've just got to recognise across football, and everyone's involved in this, is that we have a responsibility just to act and behave appropriately. Mm-hmm. And again, you know, there's a lot of proactive work that goes on, communication between us all on a match day with players, with managers and so on. But when that line's crossed, when clearly, you know, a behaviour is going to damage the image of the game, as match officials, we've got a duty to sanction that. And, you know, we don't want to have to sanction that because we want to have a positive environment, of course. But when that kind of line is crossed, then we have to intervene.
Absolutely right. The voice of reason, Will. I echo the sentiments. Are you busy this weekend? Where should we find you?
Yeah, I'll be at Grimsby Town this weekend. They're playing Mansfield, so looking forward to visiting there. And last night at Cambridge as well. So yeah, it's a busy start to the season, but it's great to have football back.
Good to hear, and it keeps you out of trouble, and as ever, no rest for the wicked. I'd say we need added time, but we don't, because you've been that succinct and concise that you've absolutely nailed it, my friend. Thank you so much for joining us right here on the official EFL podcast.
Thank you very much.
Well, as you know, right here on the official EFL podcast, every week we like to test the knowledge of the pyramid of our EFL members. And this week's victim, contestant, of course, is Millwall boss Gary Rowett.
Hi, I'm Gary Rowett, and this is EFL 72 in 72. Millwall, Charlton, Rotherham, Leighton Orient, Walsall, Stevenage, Bristol City, Bristol Rovers, Watford, Stoke, Derby County, Notts County. God, I've gone. I think of the teams in my division. Huddersfield. Hull. I've only been in it 10 years and I still can't remember them all. Burton. I think the ones I've played with. So West Brom, Watford, I think I said that. Bournemouth, no. Southampton, Norwich. Can't even remember. Oh, how long have we got?
14 seconds.
14 seconds left. So what I've got? That is pathetic. That's pathetic, isn't it? That's really poor. I did do Birmingham, I did that early. Yeah, I pulled that out back early. I know. But what I did was I did it the wrong way round. I should have gone alphabetical order. That's what I should have done.
Okay, welcome back to the final part of this week's official EFL podcast. David Stiles come back from his half-time orange. He is primed and ready and raring to go. And why not? Because joining us for this final part, it's an Irish international. It's the engaging and experienced Rams midfielder, Conor Hourihan. Conor, thank you so much for joining us, my friend. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. Thanks for having me.
It's our pleasure. I speak for Stowley when I say that. It's definitely our pleasure. Don't worry, he'll be chipping in as well. And you're both coming off the back of games last night. How's the body recovering, Conor, after yesterday?
Yeah, not too bad. You know what it's like. It's always a little bit sore when you don't win. And when you win, it's always you always get on with it and feel a little bit better. So, it's okay. It's okay.
Just give us an update on pre-season, the season so far. What's going on in Derby County's world at this moment in time?
Yeah, look, I felt like we had a really, really good pre-season. There was really good signings, really good performances, really good vibe around the place over the course of pre-season. Some good results against some good sides. And we put in some really good performances. And we were really, really hopeful to get off to a really good start. Obviously, look, that's not really been the case. It's took us all by a little bit of a surprise, if I'm being honest, including myself. I didn't really see it coming. We've obviously got beat 2 out of 3 league games and lost a cup game as well. So a bit of a challenging start, but early days, as we all know.
It's very early days indeed. I'm just intrigued. Let me bring Stowley in here just to get you both up to speed. And as you know, Stowley's one of our brightest and best, of course, at Sky Sports. And knowing our commentators like I do, they're all very thorough Connor, you'll know that. They're all very well prepped before they head into a game. Stanley, I'll come to you first. Being able to chat with players like we are doing with Connor, it's imperative for your job, really, isn't it? Given your approach, that personable approach that you've got to how you do actually commentate on games.
Well, first of all, you're very kind, Prutz, but I think you're right as well. It is important to have a good relationship with players and managers. And one of the most important things for me as a commentator and as someone who speaks a few languages or has done in the past, at least learning languages along the way, is to get the pronunciation of players' names correct. And I know down through the years, I've heard various versions of Connor's surname. I wonder how many versions Connor has heard of his own surname. Is it something that bothers you when it's wrong, or do you not care about that? How do you feel?
You know what? I'm 32 and a half now, let's say, nearly 33. So at this stage, if it bothered me, it would be wrong of me to say. So no, look, I've heard a few way of people saying it over the years. I think one or two have got it right. It seems to have come up in a lot of interviews over the last couple of years. I think they asked me when I was at Aston Villa in like a Talk Sport interview, and it kind of kicked off from there, and everyone seems to ask me since. So before I say it, why don't you give it a try?
Well, I'm lucky, I think, because I've worked with Keith Andrews, of course, but we all know Keith well. Right. And so we had a chat before a game a while back, and someone had said your name incorrectly. So he kept saying to me, make sure you say Hourihan. I've over the years I've heard Hourihane, all sorts of even Hourihane. So someone's made you sort of Spanish or Portuguese along the way. So you've had a fair few versions.
Yeah, when Wes Hoolihan was playing, I think I got a few Wes Hoolihans as well. Obviously, he's retired now, so that's kind of gone out the window a little bit. But that used to come up now and again as well.
That's tickled me with the Wes Hoolihan one. It's because I've spoken to you a couple of times with regards games and in and around games. Given how prevalent football is across all different broadcast platforms, what's your take on it? I'm not saying for one second that Stowler's ever said anything mean about you, but obviously everyone's got a pass judgment. If you are talking about pundits and former players, and you've always struck me as a very articulate and engaging fellow yourself, so I think it's something that would very much be in your kind of ballpark as well. What's your take on what's said in the media about, say, your performances, about the team's performances? Is it just part of the profession now?
Yeah, I do feel like it's part of the profession now, if I'm being totally honest with you. I do think if you really want to indulge into it and look for certain things about games, what people are saying, I think you can find this really, really easily now. I think if you can come away from that and don't go looking for it, just the complete opposite, I think you can come away from it a little bit more, especially the level, your League Twos, League Ones. Definitely you can, if you don't go looking for it, you don't see it as much. I think Championship, then you're coming into a bit of a bigger pool, bigger teams, bigger clubs, bigger goals at the end of it, getting into the Premier League. And then if you're in the Premier League, it's just so hard to get away from. It's on the radio, it's on the news channel, it's everywhere, it's all over social media. So I do think it depends on the level a little bit, but regardless of the level as well, if you really want to go looking for it, you can definitely find it. So I think a lot of players nowadays, if you've got a good game and you've been one in the top corner and you get a winner, you'll go looking for it. But if you have a poor game, then I'd advise you to stay away from it. But I think it's just one of them things now, Prutz, where it's very much in your face and all over social media. And I do say a little thing. Social media is the devil, really, a little bit at times. It can really affect players. It can really affect, football clubs, people in the building. So you have to be. It's a really fine line, really, social media at the minute.
I was going to say, as a parent, I'm very conscious of social media, albeit I've got younger kids. But as a sort of wiser head in the dressing room, if you like, do you have to keep an eye on the younger players who might come off the pitch after a game and before they've maybe even showered or had a warm down, the phone's out just to see what people are saying? And obviously that can be a dangerous way to go, can't it?
Yeah, change rooms are a lot different now. A lot of people's are young lads are on their phones constantly. There was a joke going around last year at our place that one of the younger lads' screen times was like a ridiculous amount of hours. It was just, how can you be on your phone for that much time in the day? You know what I mean? I think young people now are a little bit more fragile as well. where it affects them that little bit more. But I think that's easy to say for a more of an experienced player in the dressing room. But it's definitely one thing that you have to keep a little bit of an eye on. You know, the young lads know, you know, people coming on loan maybe into a Derby County change room, let's say, are a little bit more quiet and, like I said, a little bit more fragile. So, you know, an arm and a chat around him maybe after a poor performance or a team bad performance can do them the world of good. So, it's just having that little bit of a wise head in you, being an experienced player now and seeing them young players around the dressing room and how it's affecting them, really.
I'll tell you who must be key to all this, Stowley, and I know it'll be a name that's jumping into the forefront of your mind, is Paul Warne, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose I know Paul as in the sort of relationship between commentator and manager, where Paul's very helpful, passing on a bit of knowledge, maybe also passing on the sort of human side of the game in terms of, you know, you're talking about what players are going through off the pitch at times, and sometimes that's important in everyone's mindset, I think, when a game goes on, because the criticism, as you said, is easily out there for players to find if they want to, and we all have to be aware as members of the media that you're a footballer first, but if you like, but in people's eyes, but you're a human being, and things can be going on with that. So I think a relationship with a manager is important there from a media point of view, as well as clearly in the dressing room. So I just wondered what Paul is like for you guys as players in terms of the different gears he can go through for sort of the arm around the shoulder for some, the telling off of others, and being there as a sort of, I suppose these days managers have to be a bit of a father figure as well as a man who picks a team.
Yeah, Paul's definitely an amazing man first and foremost. You know, he's someone I've really connected with. Opened my eyes to kind of, it sounds a bit corny, I suppose, opened my eyes to life a little bit, you know what I mean? You know, enjoying the hours that you get with your kids, you know, because we do miss a lot of little moments. You know, if there's something that you want to be there for and you ask Paul, it's like, not a problem, you go and do that. You know, he's really big on that. He's huge on his man management. It's a massive thing for him. He really wants to connect with the human first before anything else, and make you feel comfortable in the environment. And he's big on living your life to the full, living every day to the max. He really says that constantly all the time. So, you know, when you're a footballer, you're so concentrated on training sessions, games and all that. He does give you that little bit of calmness and a bit of a warmth to not forget about the stuff around you as well that you may be missing in that, you know, such a tunnel vision environment that we all live in, you know, being involved in football. So he's been amazing for me from that point of view, you know, not forgetting the little things along the way, you know, going home to your kids, you know, ringing your wife on the way home from training or whatever it may be, your mom and dad, you know, it's them little things. He's been amazing from that point of view. You know, a lot of managers so focused, and I'm not saying he isn't by any stretch of the imagination, but they're so tunnel visioned on results constantly. He's just a little bit more different on making you see life that little bit more from a different point of view. And I think it's amazing, really, to be fair, because a lot of people lose sight of that in the industry that we're in.
Just to caveat that for everyone listening out there, we are talking to Connor as he's hiding in his attic away from his kids in the middle of the school holiday. I jest, of course. We're all in that scrum, aren't we, where you're getting through August. This is the thing about working in football, isn't it? You finish in May, there's a long time off, there's another little patch of time off, and all the while your kids are all still at school all the way through. And then you get the last couple of weeks or so, or the last week, and then suddenly you're back at it, aren't you, Con? So now you've had your off-season, you've had your pre-season, and it comes back full kind of swing. How is that juggle? I know, obviously, we're all very, very grateful for the extended family and immediate family that we all have to help out with football life, shall we say, but it's very important, isn't it, when you're a player, because there is that inherent part of you that has to be quite selfish to make sure that what you're there to do, you do to your absolute best.
Yeah, for sure. You know, it's like you said, it's a juggling act. You try and find some sort of balance if you can, you know, especially around this time of year where there's a lot of summer holidays, you know, when they're in the house a lot more and stuff like that. So, you try and find that little bit of balance. And for me personally, I always, we're lucky enough with Paul, lot of managers are different. You might have one day off a week, 2 days off, whatever it may be. Some managers don't give a lot of days off, but Paul's pretty structured in his schedules, where he'll give us like a monthly schedule, which is great for somebody who has kids. So you can schedule in a day or two in the month.
And does he stick to that, Colin? Sorry to butt it.
Yeah, he does, to be fair to him.
Let's just get people up to speed that are listening. In football, planning a month ahead. Yeah. My word, that's pretty good.
Yeah. No, that's rare, yeah. So the only thing that might change process is like a time, say, for instance, if we're in a half 10, it may change to 11 or 9 o'clock or whatever. But in terms of changing the days off, that's not changing unless an emergency or, you know what I mean, something drastic. But so that's massive for people for lads with kids, where you can kind of schedule in a day or two over the month where, right, that's a family day. And that goes a long way with lads. It's a real, you know, benefit to have a manager like that who thinks more forward as well, that, you know, what will make the players happy? What little extra edge could I give a player? And, you know, it's a big help, really.
With that in mind, I just wonder if you ever sort of take a moment to think back through your career and think back through the managers you've played under, because obviously you've been at a fair few clubs down through the years, a fair few bosses who are all very different and maybe bring good things out of you. Maybe you've learnt lessons from them for good or bad reasons. So do you ever think back like that? Do you get the sort of time or the headspace to do that?
I suppose you try and pick up off you know, the good things that you liked in certain managers. I suppose me, the way I'm going at the minute, you know, I'm big into my coaching and looking at that path after football. So I reflect on it maybe a little bit more. What do I like from certain managers? What, you know, didn't I like as a player or whatever? You know, what brought me success in that team or whatever it may be. So everyone's got their own traits. Everyone, you know, if a manager plays you regularly, you usually like that manager. If a manager doesn't, you probably think, oh, I didn't like him so much. It's just a common theme. But in terms of, you know, I do think now the modern player wants a human connection first before anything else. I think Paul's really good at that. Another manager who I played with, Steve Cooper, he was brilliant at that. So I think if you can connect with the human first before the player, I think you're onto a good path to start off with, really.
You mentioned about that side of what you've learned and how you're going to implement it. I understand that it's Aston Villa is your first tentative steps where the coaching has come into it, Connor. Geographically, yeah. I'm sure that helps. The fact that you've been there, you're well revered at a club that size as well. Just talk us through what you're doing there at this moment in time and how you found it so far.
Yeah, to be honest with you, I'm actually starting the first week of September. So I actually haven't started yet. So basically it's when the schools go back. So at the minute they're in their kind of summer hours where they more in day releases. Mm-hmm. So they're not in school at the minute. So obviously that's more challenging for me to go to. When they go back in September, obviously they're back to school. So they're more evening times. So that's where I can fit in. So it's going to be one day a week, possibly two. So it's with the 16s at Villa. An opportunity that got asked, you know, there was a job there, and I got asked would I be interested, and I jumped at it. You know, over the last couple of years and moving forward, it's something that I'm preparing for, definitely. It's so to start off at a club like that and in an academy with the 16s and get that opportunity is amazing, really. So I'm delighted with it.
Have you done your badges?
So I'm just about to finish my A license at the minute.
Word. Without sounding remotely condescending as a 41-year-old man, nearly 42, seeing as though you said you were 32 and a half, which killed me. To be a kind of up to speed with that, because it's there in the blink of an eye, isn't it? I'm sure you don't feel any different to what you did when you were 21, but suddenly, as Staley was saying, people might be looking at you for advice, they might be looking at you for the benefit of your experience, and you have to have one eye on what possibly could be around the corner, don't you?
Yeah, for sure. Look, you know, being the age that I am now, I've seen obviously a lot of people, you know, start off their careers at a young age and see guys in the dressing room who are finishing their careers. And a couple of things that struck me over the course of my career is the couple of players that weren't prepared when they were finished. And that scares me a little bit, if I'm being honest with you. I don't want to be that player that isn't organised, that wakes up one day and go, oh, what am I doing now? So since lockdown, really. So I had the opportunity over lockdown to do my B license, and it was an ideal opportunity to do it. So I jumped at that, and ever since I've been on my B license, I've become a bit obsessed with it, really. It's something that's kind of taken over my life a little bit, you know. So I'm just about to finish my A license. The next summer, I've been able to get on a manager's diploma with the LMA. So that's starting next June, and that's the next course I'm going on to. I'm just studying the game and meeting people along the way, and it's definitely something that I'm definitely going to be you know, looking at to doing over the next few years.
Derby County then, Connor, this season, disappointment of course at the very end of last season. Expectations on a club that is deemed as one of the bigger, if not the biggest fish in that particular division. I don't think it would be too sensationalist if you came out and said that you're aiming for promotion, but is that inwardly where the expectations, the minimum perhaps of the playoffs lies for the Rams this year?
Yeah, it's got to be. I think I can't shy away from not saying it, and if I, you know, and I'll no problem in saying it openly, that it's something that we have to strive for as a club. It's what the club demands, it's what the fans demand. You know, last night playing against Oxford, 26,000, I think it was, on a Tuesday night. You know, massive attendance, and they demand wins constantly. And you know, when you're not winning games, as we go back down the social media side of it, they'll come after you as well, as a little bit. So, yeah, look, it's something that we have to strive for as a club. The size of the club, like you said, you know, it's obviously in the league that it's in. You know, people like Ipswich and Sunderland and big clubs like that have been involved in similar tasks as what we're facing at the minute. And, you know, they managed to get out of the league. And hopefully that's going to be the case for us this year. That's the plan. Because last year, obviously, we didn't get the job done.
More importantly, Stowley, what's the press room like at Derby?
It's nice. I must admit, I went to Derby a lot in COVID times when you were literally, you'd drive to a ground, you'd stay in your car until you were closer to kick off. You'd walk up to the gantry, you'd do your game, you'd get back in your car and you'd go home because you weren't allowed to go anywhere near players, managers, and there were no fans in the ground to talk to. So it was quite a lonely time when I did quite a lot of Derby County stuff. But it always struck me that it would be a wonderful place to play the game. And I played at an incredibly modest level compared to you two. But it would have been, you know, if you're in League One, it's clearly one of those grounds that you would go to as a player. And it's the old cliche, but you look around you and you'd raise your game. If you're coming from a club which is let's say, a smaller club, a less fancied club, and with a smaller ground. So clearly that's a challenge for you guys, isn't it? That the opposition comes and probably gives the best version of themselves in your backyard, and you have to deal with that.
Yeah, for sure, without a doubt. I think that's absolutely correct. You know, I think we're one of the stadiums in the league that, you know, are top championship stadium, you know what I mean? So when people from lesser teams, no disrespect from obviously, come to a Derby County, they're like, this is one of the away games that I really wanted to play in. It was a similar situation when I was in Aston Villa in the championship. The lesser sides come to Villa Park, big stadium, historic stadium in the country, and it took us a little bit of time we struggled with that for a little bit as well when we first got into the championship and when I first signed there. So it's something that we have to deal with moving forward. You know, it's a big ground for certain teams to come to, and they love playing on an amazing surface and make the most of their evening, let's say. And it's something that we have to match first and foremost. And I think that's going to be a big thing for us over the course of the season if we want to have success.
Connor, just a couple of days out from the weekend, talk us through what this week's been. Obviously, you had a game. I presume today is a bit more about a bit of R&R. Chatting to myself and David, which I'm sure you've thoroughly enjoyed, I can tell by the look on your face.
It's been great.
Now, I mean, given the fact that you are at this stage of your career, I presume by now you've got a handle on how to manage your body between now and kick off at the weekend.
Yeah, you have to. Yeah, today is a bit of a bit of rest and a day off, and then we go back in tomorrow. And I think, you know, I'm big on routine, probably a little bit too much, even at my age now. So I'll have certain things that I'll do tomorrow, certain things that I'll do Friday, and get ready to go again Saturday. That's what's worked for me over the course of my career at my age now. I've been very luckily, touch wood, with injuries as well. So why would I change it? It's brought me, you know, success and a lot of games. So at this stage, You know, I would like to think I know how to handle my body and look after myself and be ready as best I can come every game.
Speaking of injuries, Connor, get on this. Stowley, he's had a knee. You've had knee surgery during the course of the off season. So just because we don't talk about football, Connor, over the course of the summer, doesn't mean that we're not trying to get ourselves in the best possible shape. And Stowley's done that. How's your rehab going?
Right.
Yeah. This is probably as close as I've ever come to being a professional footballer. I've had ACL reconstruction over the summer. So. That's been fun. It's just gives me a little window on what you guys go through when you have a long injury. It's been really interesting for me actually, because I'm in the fortunate position that I have to repair myself, if you like, to get back to the daily routine of getting my kids to nursery and school. And I'm not a 17, 18 year old footballer who's watching all his mates go into training every day. They're going off and running around and patted me on the head, and I'm sitting on a table getting, various treatments and things.
I know, it's difficult.
That must be awful as a footballer. And I guess where you're talking about the sort of good fortune you've had in your career with injuries, you must have seen a lot of players in a really bad state, and it must be difficult because there's not a lot you can really do to help. You can't speed up the biology of the recovery from an injury like the one I've got.
Yeah. Yeah, it can be really tough for players. It can be really lonely, especially long injuries like you on about your 9 weeks post-op. That's what, just over 2 months, you'd probably still have about another 8 months to go.
Yeah, funny enough, 8 months until I can play with my lad in the garden or my lads in the garden. So it's still 8 more months. Yeah.
I've been fortunate for myself over the course of my years with injuries. That's the case, but that's definitely a big side of the game that probably your supporter or your normal person doesn't see, because it can definitely be challenging. And it's disheartening for lads when, say, we're continuously going out to train every morning. You're going, right, I'll see you later after training, and they're going into the gym or going in for 3 minutes. It's definitely not easy. So that's another little thing as well for managers that I've seen, you know, involving the injured lads as time goes on. Just to make him feel a part of it in any way, shape or form is a big thing as well.
It's certainly important, of course, that there is that continued looking out for each other. And I get the sense that that will be one of the real cornerstones of your post-playing career, which we hope is a long, long time off, Connor, when you're a coach and a manager. I can see you there in the suit and the well-fitting kind of tie and looking a million. No baggy tracksuit for Connor. We're going to keep a keen eye on that. And if you start dressing Keith Andrews, we'll both pull you up on that. gents, it's been an absolute pleasure. Connor, first and foremost, thank you very much for your time and your day off. We wish you all the best with the rest of the season, my friend.
No problem. Thanks, guys. Appreciate
it. Stowley, my right-hand man for this week. Have you enjoyed yourself?
I've had a great time. Absolutely. By all means, ask me back sometime if I've done a decent job. I'll let you be the man who decides that and everyone listening as well. But it's been a pleasure.
Well, that's about it for this week's bumper episode. A big thank you to Conor Horahan, Gary Rowett, referee Will Finney, and Sky Sports commentator, and they're all-round good eggs, aren't they? Of course, David Stowell. As always, if you've enjoyed it, then please do give us a 5-star rating, press the follow button, and share on all of your socials. If you'd like to get in touch, our email address is podcast@efl.com. That's podcast@efl.com. My name is David Prutton. And I'll see you same time next week for another episode of the official EFL podcast.